On today's episode of Secrets to Scaling, I talk with Mike Michalowicz, the author of Profit First. We talk about when it's appropriate to take on debt and when it's not. And we talk about why he wants to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty. I think you guys are really going to get a lot out of this episode. I know I did.
Do you feel frustrated trying to scale your business online? Do you wish that there was an easier way? Imagine if you had a proven roadmap to take your online marketing from costing you to making you money. That's why we've created the Profitable E-Commerce Blueprint. We walk you through the same process that we use to run marketing campaigns online at scale for our clients. This blueprint isn't for brand new businesses without market proof. It isn't for businesses without long-term goals. This is for businesses who want to scale up their paid advertising and need a roadmap to profitability. If you want to save yourself the time, the money, and the energy, and learn from people who have already done it, go to mindfulmarketing.co/blueprint and sign up today. Now for today's episode.
All right, Mike Michalowicz, welcome to Secrets to Scaling Online.
Jordan, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Yeah, what a pleasure. We got connected through Jason Swank. Yeah. So Jason, thank you very much. Those of you who normally listen to the podcast, this is going to be a bit of a different episode. Mike is a prolific author in the business space. Mike's written books, Profit First, Clockwork, Pumpkin Plan, Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, and then a new one. What's the new one?
So a brand new one's called Fix This Next. It's coming out in 2020. So as of this recording, we're still about 5 months away.
Okay. Can you tell people a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So I'm a small business author. I've been an entrepreneur my entire life, and I think that's the relevant stuff. I never actually had a real job. After college, I had a job at a computer store and then became an entrepreneur. And honestly, it's interesting. I've had some successes from outward measurement. I built and sold two companies it was in my early 30s. Became very wealthy, had more wealth than I ever expected in my early 30s. I think the interesting part, though, is I lost all that money. And what I realized is I was successful because I was in the right place at the right time, but I attributed a lot of the success to, oh, I'm a genius. I know everything about entrepreneurship. I was growing those businesses. They were never profitable. Someone else just wanted them. So I thought, oh, like profit doesn't matter. It was my third venture. I think it's the most important. And I conveniently leave that off my resume. But my third business was an angel investment firm. I started all these different businesses simultaneously. I was using my own money. 2 years blew all of my wealth on arrogance and ignorance. And it forced me to restart and reinvestigate what I didn't know about entrepreneurship. It's actually why I became an author. I was dreamed of being an author one day. And now I had a real purpose behind it. I needed to fix all these things I didn't understand about entrepreneurship. I didn't understand profit worked. I didn't understand how efficiency worked. I didn't understand about marketing or sales at all, really. So yeah. I decided to reinvestigate them, but also to simplify it. So I try to make these concepts extremely simple, extremely actionable, and driving results. So every book I've done, that's the mission, make entrepreneurship simple in some facet. And as of today now, I've written 6 books and my 7th one coming out, and plan to be an author for the entirety of my remaining life.
Yeah. I love your mission statement that I've heard you talk about before, you want to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
there's this gap. So just to define what that is.
Yeah.
There's this gap. So the day you started your business, Jordan, I suspect all your friends are like, oh my God, Jordan, you're like a millionaire now.
Yeah.
You're so rich. You know, and you don't even have to work for it. The money just pours in. The reality is for most entrepreneurs, we're far from rich and the money's not pouring in and we work our tails off to make that nothing happen, right?
Yeah.
So I call that entrepreneurial poverty. The perceived success, the actual reality where you are, this gap is what I call entrepreneurial poverty. And it's my mission to close this. I think our world is starving for successful entrepreneurs that are very financially sound, that are living a lifestyle of comfort, that are able to contribute to our society, because entrepreneurs provide jobs for everyone else.
Yeah.
And if the entrepreneur is successful, they can bring that success to others. So that's what I'm trying to close, that entrepreneurial poverty gap.
Yeah. So what do you think has been the number one thing that's going to do, like what's the place that you tell somebody to start, right? If they're really going to get into it, like,
yeah. So it's funny. So that's why I wrote my newest book, Fix This Next. I wrote that book because I used to have a carte blanche answer. If you said, what should I do now? I'm like, oh, you got to reprofit first because you got to fix profits. And I say, well, you got to read Clocker. You got to be efficient. Oh, you need to read the Pumpkin Plan. You need sales. Or you got to read someone else's book, like Top Grading for Hiring or How to Hire the Best. You know, I would just espouse what I felt compelled to share because I was interested in it.
Yeah.
What I found, what I've concluded is the biggest challenge entrepreneurs face is they don't know what their biggest challenge is. Mm. Therefore, we need a way to pinpoint what to resolve and put in sequence. So this book I'm right now recommending that hasn't come out yet is Fix This Next. And what I did was I analyzed the roughly, you know, loosely said, the DNA of entrepreneurship and business journeys. And through a series of questions can very quickly pinpoint where the business is now, where their biggest challenges they need to resolve, let them fix it, and then go through a sequence of questions again to find where the next impactful need is.
Hmm. Awesome. I'm looking forward to that one.
Thank you. Me too. I hope it's of service. I think it's the most important book I've ever written. But only readers will know or be able to share if it really is that impactful. I hope it is.
Yeah, that's great. How often do you get people reaching out to you, like telling you success stories?
Oh, constant. I would say I get 20 to 30 emails a day. And it's probably by design. So in every one of my books, I encourage people, reach out to me. I read my emails. Now it's actually at the point of overwhelm. I have a person here that is her full-time job responsibility is manage my email just so that I can have a morning summary or an evening summary of what kind of emails have come in.
But yeah,
it is the ultimate affirmation for me. Like every time I get an email from a reader, it's like, oh my God, this is working. I got to keep doing this. So it's great fuel for me selfishly.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that it is, right? You want to know that something's working. Like there has to be some kind of dashboard, right?
Yeah, I call it the affirmation. Yeah, it's true. I call it the affirmation loop.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to get in contact. And then, you know, I'm able to respond to quite a few, not all of them anymore. I used to respond to every single one. Over the years, it's been probably, well, you know, you run the math, 30 a day for however long. I think it's been tens of thousands of emails. So what I do know is I use the software called BombBomb. It's a video response software.
Yeah.
I think it's badass, Jordan.
Yeah.
So occasionally I respond to people.
Bonjouro?
Yeah, Bonjouro is the alternative. I used to use Bonjouro. Dude, this is crazy. I used Bonjouro so much, it was overwhelming their system. And we reached out to their support multiple times and they said, you're our biggest power user. So they were trying to resolve things, but we covered a BombBomb, which for my application is actually even more effective.
Okay.
So some days I do, you know, 5 or 10 videos. Other days I'll do like 40 or 50 emails, video emails a day. And when I send that out to readers, oh my gosh, the engagement is fantastic.
Oh, I'm sure that you create super fans.
Oh yeah. It results in like, here's, I got one right here. So I even have like the sign here. So this one, if you're watching the video, it's to Helen, I just sent a video. And so people feel super engaged. And I think the biggest opportunity for every business owner is to do something beyond email. There's this tactile experience that we're not shaking hands anymore. We're not seeing each other anymore. So the video is one way to bridge the gap to some degree.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm really trying to implement that in my, like the relationships that I'm kind of forming as well.
Oh, good.
It seems like a no-brainer.
It really is.
Yeah. One of our clients, they do online lessons. And so like it's piano lessons, this particular company, and they'll actually send a welcome email to every single person, or they'll send that welcome message to every single person, which for them is like, I'm sure in the thousands, right? Like, cause it's like a platform that has lessons that kind of bring you.
Oh, I see. I love it. Right?
So yeah, like just a huge amount of work, but so much impact.
So much impact. And I'll tell you, our competition isn't doing it.
Yeah.
Like I tell a lot of people about this ability, this function, and people get excited about it and they do it for a week. But it's like running a race. You got to stick with it on the long haul. And most people give up because it is time consuming.
Yeah.
But that time is effort spent on, you know, making a relationship concrete.
Totally. You know what I'm actually changing from a lot is pure automation. I'm changing to a lot more like away from automation and into more just the personal kind of stuff.
I like that.
yeah, it just doesn't seem to have the same kind of impact. So automate all the back end, but all the front end, I want to keep like this, right?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Couple questions for you. This is my free consulting I'm getting from you right now. Okay, Mike.
Oh, okay.
So in Profit First, so for those of you who have read Profit First, you know, it's all about, taking that certain amount of profit that you can at first. Yes. And we divide our bank account into, for us, it's 5 different accounts. Where does marketing and growth fit in?
Great question. So in the book, there's the 5 foundational accounts. Marketing would come out of operating expenses. Now, if a business has a substantial expenditure in any category, I usually suggest setting up another account. So maybe set up an account for marketing. You know, if you're investing heavily in that and 10% or more of your top line is going to marketing, you should set up an account called marketing, allocate that 10% there so it's funded. So you have a very specific dollar amount that you're observing. If you take it just out of OpEx, that blends with any other operating expense you have, and it gets a little confusing of how you're spending and controlling your marketing. Growth is often a bastardized term, because growth usually translates back to just expenses, right? Like, well, I need to hire people. I need to invest in equipment. I need marketing. I need all these different things. All that growth, that stuff, that's an OpEx. So it comes out of operating expenses. The one place that growth does not come from, is probably a better way to qualify it, is from the profit account. So as you start accumulating profit, some people will say, I'm going to reinvest money into my business to grow. And the second you take profit and you reinvest it, it was never profit. It was simply you played a shell game. You put it into an account and now you're spending it. When you spend money, it's an expense. When profit is distributed to the shareholder, like we talked about off air, when it's distributed to the shareholder, that money is now profit. So money retained for shareholders and or distributed to shareholders is profit. Money that's spent by a business is always an expense. So we need to bifurcate it out. The interesting thing is we have over 300,000 companies doing Profit First. So we have a lot of case studies. And we consistently...
Mike, that's insane.
Oh, dude.
If the case study that I told you before about, you know, the amount of profit now that we're taking out of our businesses is anything. That's 2 businesses out of 300,000. Like, that's game changing.
Yeah. Yes. And it, for me, it's been life changing. It is the most humble and honored I've ever been, if that's even humble honor or whatever the word is. But just that this is really working. And the other thing, the flip side, is we haven't even scratched the surface. There's 180 million small businesses globally. 300,000 is not even a scratch of the surface. So there's a long distance to go. But of these businesses, the most fascinating data we found is that businesses that take its profits first inevitably is outpacing their competitors in growth, which sounds crazy. These businesses are more profitable than their competitors and they're growing faster, which is contrary to what we think. To grow, it takes money. It takes money to make money. That's the saying, right? What we found is businesses that take their profit first become more focused on what's effective in their spend. So they spend more effectively. They spend on stuff that actually has an ROI. They don't just throw the term out and say, what's the ROI? They know it. And they invest accordingly and they avoid it. There's a principle out there called the Pareto principle. It's the 80-20 rule.
Yeah.
Basically, the concept is 20% of your effort is going to yield 80% of the result. Well, if you start taking your profit first, now you got to focus in. What truly is that 20% of stuff that we're doing that's driving the growth, and concentrate your efforts there? And that's what they do.
Yeah. Which, like, I feel like all of your books kind of focus around that, right? Like
80-20. I'm a big believer because it's been life-changing for me. It's I've grown my businesses. I've achieved profit. I've achieved degrees of happiness and success in the traditional sense that I never anticipated I've achieved until I understood the effectiveness of that 80-20 concept.
Yeah. I'm with lots of our clients and with our businesses as well. I'm getting so sick of talking about top line revenue. Cause it just like, it's such a vanity metric, right? Like, awesome. Oh wow. You did 5 million last year. That's
oh my God. So I kill you. Yeah. I want to pull out my receding hairline over that. Oh my God. So I used to be in an entrepreneurial community and I call it the, how big is it group? Like you come in and there's always 2 questions. How much do you have in sales? How many employees do you have? Both are asking the exact same thing. You know, because if you tell me you have 10 employees, I multiply that by 150, you probably have a $1.5 million business. Like, people are running the calculations. And it's this big, how big is it contest. The funny or sad thing is that of these businesses that were achieving, say, $5 million in revenue or whatever, many of them, most of them were dying, struggling. You know, the guy who buys the big house and has all lawn furniture inside because he can't afford a healthy That's what these businesses were. It was a big charade. So when people say, Mike, how big is your business? I now like to just flip the conversation and say, hey, that's a great question. But let me, if you don't mind, let me flip the question and say, how healthy is your business? That changes the trajectory of everyone. Yeah. I am more impressed by a company that does, say, $500,000 in revenue and the owner taking home $200,000 and they're joyful than a company that's doing $5 million and the owner's going bankrupt.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, and even the time thing, right? Like having time.
Right, to live
outside
life.
Of work. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get right back to the episode. But first, do you feel frustrated trying to scale your business online? Do you wish that there was an easier way? Imagine if you had a proven roadmap to take your online marketing from costing you to making you money. That's why we've created the Profitable E-Commerce Blueprint. You can find out more at mindfulmarketing.co/blueprint. Now, back to today's episode.
Yeah, that's been a huge thing for us, is just trying to like cut down our work days, right? And we inevitably get the same amount of work done.
and that's what I'm finding too. So that's Parkinson's law that's kicking in. So Parkinson stated, he's a theorist in the 1950s, the more of a resource that's available, the more we'll consume. More money I have, the more I'll spend. The more food put in front of me, the more I'll eat. The more time I have, the more I'll utilize. But we also pointed out though, is we restrict and constrain a resource, become more efficient in its utilization and more innovative. And so I'm seeing a lot of studies about, and we're testing this now too, is shorter work days may actually result in more output from a business. So instead of the traditional 8-hour work day, I see businesses doing 6-hour work days. We have effectively lopped off our Fridays. The only person that hasn't done that yet is myself. So shame on me. I'm slowly stopping working on Fridays. I also though do take a 4-week vacation now. And all these different things I've implemented actually has shown to increase productivity. And here's my belief, is that when someone is giving 8 hours a day to work, myself included, we cannot work 8 hours straight. We need to take those mental breaks and go on Facebook and do whatever. Well, we only have 14 people here. We're tiny, but we have most of our workforce are part-timers. And here's the craziest experiment of all. I brought in a part-timer. Her name's Amy. She works 3 hours a day. She comes at 9. She leaves at noon. And her first day of work, effectively, I gave her 8 hours of work. I said, oh, here's your work to do. And she left. And right before she left, I said, how did they go? She said, just got it all done. I'm heading out now. I'm like, oh. Next day, I gave her 8 hours of work, kind of looked around, came out, and then 3 hours, I go, how'd it go? She goes, just got down to the wire. I'm done. I found that part-time workers, the downtime, the Facebook time, that's done at home.
Yeah.
When they come into the office, 3 hours, she comes in and she's like on fire. She's like, I don't have the time to horse around here. And she's cranking stuff out, which is Parkinson's law. So a 3-hour worker is doing 8 hours of work. Or maybe the 8-hour workers were only doing 3 hours of work.
Yeah. Yeah. And stretching it out. I'm with you. Okay. I've got a question for you. Do you believe ever in taking on debt to grow?
Yes. And so that's almost, people think it's contrary because on Profit First, I drive so much, eradicate debt, crush debt.
Yeah.
Here's my belief, that most entrepreneurs take on inappropriate debt. They leverage the hilt of themselves and they destroy themselves.
Okay.
Here's where I believe debt should be used, and it happens infrequently. But if you have a assured ROI, and what I mean by that is you have a time frame, say 60 days. If I put a dollar in my business today and spend a dollar, in 60 days from now, I'm going to get $2 back for sure, meaning I have an extremely high degree of confidence. Well, shit, leverage the hell out of that one if it's guaranteed.
Yeah.
Most entrepreneurs have no guarantee. They say, you know what? We need a loan so we can do more marketing and we're going to get some business from it. Like, that's the measurement.
Yeah.
That's a fool's folly. That is freaking crazy. You're just blowing money. But if you know with a extremely high certainty, within a certain short time frame, there's a guaranteed return, well, that's something you want to leverage and invest in for sure. Mm,
awesome. So would you take on debt to purchase product?
So do I know I'm going to make, for every dollar I spend on that product, $2 60 days from now? That's my rough rule, is 60 days, sometimes 90 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I wouldn't take on debt to try out new product. I wouldn't take on debt to build a massive inventory. I wouldn't take on debt to say, oh, I heard there's, you know, I can get this inventory for half price if I move fast now and buy this mass swath of stuff and fill up my house, my office, my basement, and my mother's house. Like, that I think is the mistake people make. It's particularly with other people's money or OPM. It is very easy, and I've lived this. I got a $100,000 investment in my business. And what I do, I said, well, I need that nice office space. And everything's justified.
Yeah.
So it's human nature that we make emotional decisions and we backfill it with logic. So I'm like, I need that nice office. That was my emotional decree. Then my justification is, you know, when I have clientele and prospects come in here, I want to show them my success. You know, I need that nice car because when I drive around and meet with prospects, I want them to see my success so they feel more trust and confidence in me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's all nonsense. But when I had other people's money, it was so easy to spend it and justify it. So I believe we often find better, greater solutions by not using other people's money, debt. I often find we find better solutions by not even using our own money, but instead of using innovative thinking. Mm. So I'm a big believer in that.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great. For you, what's the because this is this podcast is generally all about paid ads. What's the role of paid ads for you guys? Do you use any?
Yeah. So it's interesting. So we've done it. What we found with paid ads, which was interesting, is that paid ads for us did drive a spike of the results we wanted, which was conversions into buying clients, right? But very quickly it started to wane, and it waned consistently and linearly. It was declining. And initially we got to spend more money to keep it going, and that didn't work. So then we said, well, we got to change our advertisements, and we get a little spike up. But I realized that paid advertising was saturating the same audience very quickly.
Gotcha.
The thing we believe in, and I challenge people to flip the formula, is ask yourself, or we did ask ourselves, is how do we get paid to advertise? Not how do we pay for advertising, but how do we get paid for advertising? And that really...
Explain that.
Yeah. So it's just a crazy question, right? Instead of me spending $10, for example, to acquire a client or a subscriber or whatever, how does a client pay me $10 to become a subscriber or a client? And I realized books are a very effective marketing tool. Now, if you write a book as a marketing gimmick, very ineffective. If you write a book that is truly of service to your community, it transfers trust. And the goal, I believe, of marketing actually is the transfer of trust and the encouragement of action. First of all, do I trust this ad or this pitch enough that I have the confidence to take the action that they're decreeing me to take? Well, I found a book is the ultimate information product. It's all of the knowledge packed between pages.
Yeah.
Can I, in that information product, be so compelling and of such great service that a person says, I believe this? And can it generate a loyal constituency of fans that say, this guy has got it going on? That is the ultimate marketing. And they're paying $10 or $20 to buy the book. Then can I invite them to take an action that's truly of service to them? That's the other component. You can't say, take an action to spend more money with me because I'm going to make more money.
No, yeah.
Take an action that will be of service to you. And you may choose to depart with money to do that. In the book, I found is the greatest thing. So when we run our numbers here, and I own multiple businesses that are the licensees, if you will, behind the books, every one of our companies, generates the majority of its leads and activity by those leads and activity paying for a book.
Mm. Interesting.
And we don't advertise. And the books, I hope, continue to serve so well that we don't advertise the books. It's not like I have to put ads out there. No, let me say this. When I launch a new book, I'm using paid advertising. I want to get the word out in a big way in the beginning, make a big splash. That's my objective.
Yeah.
But the ongoing, the books now market themselves through word of mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. That was a great answer. So this podcast, Secrets to Scaling, what's your secret to scaling?
So secret scaling is to really be absolutely clear on where I'm good and where I'm not good, and not being the superhero of thinking I can do everything, to being really cognizant of my abilities. Then finding a complementary team and assembling them to fill in those roles. It is a slow slog in the beginning. So scaling is not like a direct path. It is a very slow, period. And then over time, it'll start ramping faster.
Yeah.
I had to fill in those gaps. And so it was just being really clear and looking in the mirror and saying, I'm not good at building the operations and ensuring efficiency. I'm not good at the details.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm not good at these different, I'm actually not a good networker and I'm not that good at sales. What I am good at is public speaking.
Yeah.
And I'm good at writing books and focusing on delivering that and then building a team around me. The other part of scaling is, you know, I think small businesses understand this, but large businesses don't. As a small business, when I hired that first employee, that's 100% business growth. That's like Google saying tomorrow, we're going to hire 100,000 new employees and double their growth. Yeah. It's the equivalent on the impact. So what I realized is scaling my business requires a lot of part-time and portioned labor. I'm not going to find the next me. Cloning myself is ridiculous. But what is that one element where I can hire a part-time person to work the 3 hours a day that I can actually afford that will move the ball forward? And once that person's rolling along, what's the next maybe one technology I can plug in? And it's really being very tactful in implementing these small pieces and not trying to get the one big solution in as a chunk.
Hmm. Great. Awesome. Awesome wisdom. Thank you. We're going to move on to our lightning round here.
Okay. Thunder is the answer. You said lightning, I said thunder.
Perfect. Perfect. And we're done.
We're done. We're done.
Awesome. Favorite tool or app that you're using right now?
Well, we talked about BombBomb. I mean,
yeah.
I'm addicted to it. So that's the winner at the moment. Voxer is the runner up.
And you'd say that on top, like ahead of Bonjoro.
Yeah. Yeah. I was addicted to Bonjoro. I actually thought it was the best app ever. I just overwhelmed the system. It was becoming sluggish and not effective. BombBomb for me, the performance is superior and actually the tracking now is superior too.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Favorite podcast right now?
Mike Rose, How I Heard It podcast. These little vignettes, these like 5-minute vignettes on stories with a little twist at the end. It's a throwback to old radio. I love it.
Cool. Cool. Awesome. And you have a podcast as well. Is that right?
Yeah. It's called Entrepreneurship Elevated.
Awesome. And what do you guys talk about on that?
Ways for businesses to break out of entrepreneurial poverty, that gap of where you should be and where you are. So it's all different strategies around efficiency, profitability, establishing a legacy, having impact, mastering sales, everything.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great. And who's a founder that you look up to?
A founder that I look up to. In the big companies, you know, like guys like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and Sarah Blakely, I look up to them because of what they've achieved. I do think that they represent a mythology though. So I don't aspire to be like them. They're the lottery winners. They're great, impactful people. They're the lottery winners. So the founders I look up to, there's a guy named Chris Forty. You'll never know who he is. He's an impressive guy. Frank is an impressive guy. Sue, there's a lot of people that I know that own these micro businesses. Those are the ones that I really look up to actually.
Hmm. Awesome. That sounds like an answer you'd give.
Yeah. Predictable.
No, I love it. It was great. And where can people find out more about you?
At MikeMikalowicz.com, but there's a shortcut because Mikalowicz is impossible to spell. It's MikeMotorbike.com. That was my nickname in high school and it rhymes. So MikeMotorbike.com. Go there, forge onto my site and all my books, there's chapter downloads and it's the impact chapters. Like the things that, even if you don't buy the book, you will see results from it. It's not just the fluff. So impact chapters and I used to write for the Wall Street Journal. My articles are there for free. I'm a blogger. And as you shared, I'm a podcaster too with Entrepreneurship Elevated. All that stuff is up there for free at Mike Motorbike.
Awesome. And where would you tell people to start in your book journey?
Well, funny enough, I would start with Fix This Next, but it hasn't been released yet. The reason is Fix This Next, my newest book, pinpoints what you need to work on in your business. And I think that's the biggest challenge that entrepreneurs face. They don't know what their biggest challenge is. So we often go to random urgent issues as opposed to the impactful thing. But not knowing that, before I tell you what book to read, I would simply ask, where's your biggest challenge currently? And if it's profit, it's profit first. If it's in growth, maybe it's the pumpkin plan. And if it's in HR, I actually haven't written the book. I would suggest reading something like How to Hire the Best by Dr. Starling or something like that, a book that serves your specific challenge at the moment.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate your time. Thanks, Mike.
Jordan, thank you so much for having me, brother.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Secrets to Scaling Online. If you're loving what you're hearing, subscribe to our podcast and share this with a friend. No, seriously, share it with a friend. No, if you don't, I'm going to find you and I'm going to make you profitable. Got it? No, seriously.